1906, Metzinger v. Department of Veterans Affairs. Ms. Riccio, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. I am Marie Riccio, and may it please the court, I am appearing on behalf of the appellant and plaintiff, Dr. Rebecca Metzinger. This appeal is with respect to the transfer of a claim alleging violations of the Equal Pay Act that was filed in the Eastern District of Louisiana. The Equal Pay Act, as amended, was enacted by Congress as an amendment to the Fair Labor Standards Act. In short, and this is all I'll say about the act, is on it, in terms of its merits. Is
we're very. I appreciate your walking us through this, but I think we're very familiar with all of that. We have, our court has a long history with these issues, and I must kind of say, you've been, you know, ping-ponged around on this, and I just, that is recognized a little. I assume maybe at bottom you just want a home for your case to be heard?
That is true, except I believe that the correct home is the Eastern District of Louisiana. And if I might just present the court with a case that I'm looking at that is not in the brief, and I would like to alert you to how I got to this. I went back and started to think that maybe we had all gone down a rabbit hole with respect to the Tucker Act, because the FSLA simply says that suit may be filed in any court of competent jurisdiction, and there is Supreme Court precedent on what constitutes a court of competent jurisdiction and defines it, and that was in Lightfoot versus Sendent Mortgage, and it's a 137 Supreme Court 553. But I also saw that the Supreme Court in a Breuer case, and this is Breuer versus Jim's Concrete of Brevard, had a situation in which an FSLA claim was filed in a state court of Florida, and the defendant tried to remove it to a district court in the Middle District of Florida under 28 U.S.C. Section 1441A. And the Supreme Court said there was no bar to the removal because under 1441A, any civil action brought in a state court of which the district courts of the United States have original jurisdiction may be removed. So when I read that, I think about the fact that if there's original jurisdiction in the district court with respect to the removal statute, I don't see that the Judge Vance's conclusion in the Eastern District that only the Court of Federal Claims had exclusive jurisdiction over this case was correct. And that's really the essence of my argument.
This is Judge Prost. I appreciate what you're saying, and just for future reference, the challenge we have with this presentation is we have a procedure 28J, where if you discover sort of new cases that are relevant, if you present them to the court before argument, it gives us an opportunity to think about it, and it also gives the other side an opportunity to be prepared to respond, which is a little bit more challenging in this context. So I would just point that out to you for future reference.
And I appreciate that, Your Honor. What I do believe is that it isn't a new concept. In the brief, I argued and wrote that the error here was the conclusion that either the Tucker Act or the Little Tucker Act required the court to conclude that the jurisdiction of the Court of Claims was exclusive. And really, that's where I'm coming from. The jurisdiction rests in the district.
I understand that certainly Supreme Court precedent would overrule, it comes before above anything we say, but we do have our own precedent in the Abbey case, correct?
That's correct. But Abbey found that the Court of Claims has jurisdiction. It did not find that it was exclusive. And I think that's the essence of what's happening here.
I appreciate the point you're making, and I don't want to interrupt you, but I'd love to have a cite to that Breuer case that you mentioned. Is that right? You said Breuer?
Yes, it's B-R-E-U-E-R. And the citation is 538 U.S. 691. It's a 2003 decision. And the reason why I believe that the court was wrong, and I'm talking about Judge Vance, in connection with the conclusion that she reached, was that she relied on a decision that came out of the Fifth Circuit many years ago that actually dealt with the Title VII exhaustion issues, and that was the Barnes v. Levitt decision.
My vague recollection is that the government was not a defendant in that case, correct?
No, and what happened in that case was
the government was not the defendant in that case, right?
It was not a defendant. The government was not a defendant. It was a civil action brought under both Title VII and Equal Pay Act. But what the court had concluded in the Fifth Circuit in 1997 was that they hadn't exhausted remedies under the Title VII claim, and actually decided that there was no jurisdiction for the court because of the failure to exhaust remedies. And I think since then, the Supreme Court has actually come in and cast some doubt on the validity of even that part of Barnes v. Levitt, which was the majority of Barnes v. Levitt, and I believe that's in the Bend decision. I'll pull that in a second. But let me ask you about
on that case that you just cited to us, the Brewer case.
Yes.
If the government was not a defendant or a party in that case, why would it have any relevance to Tucker Act jurisdiction and the Court of Federal Claims? I'm at a disadvantage because I don't have the case in front of me.
Because the court said that the FLSA, because it allows for filing of a suit in any court of competent jurisdiction, and that means that you have to have an independent jurisdiction other than the act itself, allows for a district court to have original jurisdiction. And I don't see anything in the Equal Pay Act that distinguishes a claim against the government from a claim against a private corporation if what we're talking about is the meaning of the words court of competent jurisdiction. That's why I believe it's significant.
Counsel, did you say, I think I understand your point to be that when referring to any court of competent jurisdiction, you're saying that what you've got here is you've got a Supreme Court saying that under federal question jurisdiction, the district court in Florida was a court of competent jurisdiction.
Correct. And we filed this action, this EPA action, under federal question jurisdiction. So to me, what we have is a situation where the Tucker Act is being misinterpreted to include a result that I don't think Congress would have intended. And I say that because there is nothing that I have seen other than that Fifth Circuit decision, and it was really almost dicta, in which the Fifth Circuit said, well, Equal Pay Act claims come under Tucker Act, and therefore we don't have jurisdiction of them if they're worth more than $10,000. I don't see anything in the Federal Circuit that has concluded that the jurisdiction of the Court of Claims is exclusive. So, and when I look at the implications here, they're very significant. You have a plaintiff who is in Louisiana, and any one of the people who might bring one of these discrimination claims based on sex and wage discrimination is going to be operating where they have to go hire a lawyer in the federal court of claims or in that district, that region. They will have to try to subpoena witnesses outside of the jurisdiction where those witnesses reside.
This is Judge Stoll. One of the concerns I have about what you're saying, you're saying Abby doesn't say that the Court of Federal Claims is the only jurisdiction, but there's been quite a few courts who have interpreted Abby otherwise. How do you respond to that?
Well, when I looked at what Abby was relying on, Abby also went back to an earlier Fifth Circuit case. It seems like everything started back with a case that years ago just reached the wrong conclusion. And in both situations, I think it's the Graham v. Hennigan case, I believe is what it was. In both situations, the court said that it was reaching that decision sua sponte, and it hadn't been briefed. I thought that was interesting. That was true for both the case that Judge Vance relied upon and this Hennigan decision, Graham v. Henniger, that's what it was, Graham v. Henniger, which was at 640 F. 2nd 732, the 1981 case that was mentioned in Abbey. I don't believe that those decisions carefully considered what the ultimate results of their conclusion that there was a de facto exclusivity would cause in terms of the consequences.
Well, and I think that would seem to be an argument that Abbey was wrong, not that Abbey didn't say what other courts have said, think it said.
I don't believe Abbey was wrong. Under its facts, Abbey concluded that the Court of Federal Claims has jurisdiction under the Tucker Act, and it does. It's just that so does the district court.
Well, look at 1371 of Abbey. I mean, there are a number of quotes from Abbey, but that one says, and where the federal government is sued for damages or back pay, the court of competent jurisdiction can only be one exercising Tucker Act jurisdiction.
Well, in the end, what it concluded was that the Court of Claims has jurisdiction. That's the holding. The language may be something else, but the holding finds jurisdiction in the Court of Claims, and we don't disagree with that. There is jurisdiction in the Court of Claims. It's just that in this case, in Dr. Metzinger's case, there was also jurisdiction, we believe, in the district court, and that's based on the language of the statutes. There's nothing to suggest that a court of competent jurisdiction is going to exclude the district court when you have a Section 1331 arising under jurisdiction.
You referred me to a Fifth Circuit 1981 case when I asked you my question about courts interpreting Abbey after Abbey to give the Court of Federal Claims exclusive jurisdiction. But there are a number of courts that have. They're, in fact, cited by the government in a different brief in a different case. They are, you know, for example, the Tenth Circuit cited Abbey and said jurisdiction lies in the Court of Federal Claims, and the D.C. Circuit did. What am I supposed to do with things like that? I mean, not only is there the language of Abbey that Judge Prost was pointing out, and there's the other language as well, but also other courts are interpreting Abbey that way and agreeing and looking at the issue and agreeing with the Federal Circuit on that Abbey is saying that the Court of Federal Claims has exclusive jurisdiction.
Please answer.
Yes. Well, the Federal Circuit has jurisdiction of this case under the Transfer Act. I think the Federal Circuit is really going to be the circuit that should interpret what the Court of Claims jurisdiction is. The question is whether or not the district courts around the nation also have jurisdiction. And if they conclude, as Judge Vance did, that there is a de facto exclusivity, and that's what she says, that's what's troubling, then I don't think it's correct. She didn't have a case that she could rely upon to suggest that there was no jurisdiction in the district court other than a case that she cited, which was the earlier Fifth Circuit opinion that I talked about. And that case was since disavowed in many ways because it concluded it had no jurisdiction under Title VII because it had exhausted remedies. Had not exhausted remedies. I don't think that was true. And it's almost a one short sentence of dicta in the end of that case in which the Fifth Circuit talks about the fact that the jurisdiction doesn't exist under the Equal Pay Act because of Tucker. And I don't think that any of these other courts in any of the decisions that I read explored what it means to be a court of competent jurisdiction the way the Supreme Court has identified that. And I looked at that in the Lightfoot case, which was the one I cited, 137 Supreme Court 553. And, of course, we do have the Bormez situation that I know that counsel for the government is going to address at length, which I didn't want to try to duplicate the argument that I know they're going to be making. But to me, Breuer is on point to the extent that if a district court has original jurisdiction by virtue of 28 U.S.C. 1331, I don't see how that is in conflict with the jurisdiction that we asserted with respect to the FLSA, especially since that case addresses an FLSA claim.
Okay. I think your time is exhausted unless any panel member has further questions.
Nope.
Okay. Why don't we hear from the government then? Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Prost, and may it please the court. The district court possessed federal question jurisdiction to entertain Dr. Metzinger's equal pay act claim under 28 U.S.C. 1331, and therefore erred in transferring the claim for want of jurisdiction.
Well, Mr. Edelstick, I'm sure you're going to address this in your argument, so just let me make sure. I feel like at some point I'm getting whiplash in these cases. I mean, initially you asked that you argued that the case should be transferred to the Court of Federal Claims, and now you're taking a different view. As Judge Stoll alluded to, there's a case called Stein recently, the same time this case has been briefed. I think you've submitted your red brief in December of 2020, and I think in February of 2021, the government before the First Circuit said that the court was right, the district court there, for transferring the case, another FLSA case, to the Court of Federal Claims. And the government made a fulsome argument that Abby supported or compelled that. So what, am I missing something? Are there inconsistent positions being taken in these situations by the government or changing positions?
Well, Your Honor, there shouldn't be. I confess I'm not familiar with Stein, but I can tell you that there is supposed to be coordination between the U.S. Attorney's offices and our office.
You don't even know about the Stein case?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You're not even familiar with that case that took place in the First Circuit?
No, Your Honor. I'm not aware of that
okay.
case.
Well, what about the fact that the government initially took that same position here in this case, and then seems to have changed it in the midst of this case?
I can speak to that, Your Honor.
Okay.
It has been the consistent position of our office for some time now that the district courts possess jurisdiction in FILSA and Equal Pay Act cases. There's some question before Abby as to whether the Court of Federal Claims also possessed jurisdiction or not. Abby resolved at least part of that question with respect to whether the Court of Federal Claims has jurisdiction. But the exclusivity question is one that there should not be jurisdictional ping pong. We regret that there was a lack of coordination on the front end. In this particular case, once the case came to our office, we corrected the error in the position that was taken. So we respectfully apologize that there has been inconsistent positions, but
counsel,
since Bormez,
this is Judge Stoll. I didn't hear you say maybe why. Why did the government change its mind in this particular case and decide, you know, at first to want to transfer the case and then change its mind? Is there a reason that you know of?
There is not a principled reason. There are some, you know, close to 5,000 assistant U.S. attorneys across the country. Not everyone. There was a lack of communication in this particular instance.
It seems if we're right, if I'm right about Stein, that seems to be an ongoing issue, and I haven't looked at it. There are a number of district courts, right, that have read Abby as requiring that they transfer these FLSA cases back to the Court of Federal Claims. So I'm not really sure how widespread. What are we supposed to do? That, I mean, so you've recognized, so the government is taking inconsistent positions because of lack of coordination with the various U.S. attorney's offices around the country. What are
Your Honor, there has been coordination, but there was unfortunately there was a failure of communication in this particular case. There has been great efforts to communicate and to try to be consistent, but as Your Honor noted, it has not been entirely consistent.
Counsel, just so you know, in the Stein case, the First Circuit just issued a decision days ago in which it dismissed the case, holding that there was no jurisdiction in the district court, and it was exclusively in the Court of Federal Claims, agreeing with the government's position.
Your Honor, I apologize. I'm not familiar with Stein. It was not cited in the briefs, and I'm...
One of my law clerks found it just doing a routine search. And just so you know, it's the appeal number is appeal number 20-1906, and again, it's in the First Circuit.
Well, I would be happy...
to look at it right now. I'm just letting you know to further...
Sure, and if the court wishes for us to address that in a supplemental brief, we'd be happy to do so. But this is, to my knowledge, the first time that this court is deciding the what is a very important issue on the merits of the question of whether the Court of Federal Claims has exclusive jurisdiction in FILSA claims or Equal Pay Act claims against the United States when the amount of controversy exceeds $10,000.
And you don't think that Abby is best read as saying that? Or is it your view, as it seems to have been your friend on the other side or on your side now, that it was... whatever Abby said was dicta because the only conclusion there was it's in the Court of Federal Claims and it doesn't exclude the district court.
I agree with Ms. Riccio on that. The district
court
did
dicta. You're not arguing that Abby didn't say what it said. You're arguing that we can dismiss that as dicta because the conclusion didn't, in your view, didn't necessarily compel that broader finding. Is that your view? Is that your position?
Two answers to the question. Yes, it was dicta. And secondly, I believe the language that Your Honor read from page 1371 of the Abby opinion is actually a citation to a government brief from 1995, long prior to Bormes. Obviously, as the questioning has pointed out, the government's position on these issues has evolved over time. And we think...
the government's position now is that before Bormes, we agreed there was exclusive jurisdiction in the Court of Federal Claims, but the question then became whether or not Bormes dislodged that. And you're saying it did, and Abby was wrong in its analysis of Bormes.
That's right, because Bormes, a unanimous Supreme Court, explained that a self-executing remedial scheme supersedes the gap-filling role of the Tucker Act. And
okay. Well, do you understand that we can't overrule our own precedent unless we conclude that...
And we are not asking the court to overrule Abby. The holding of Abby is that the Court of Federal Claims possesses jurisdiction, but Abby did not consider whether district courts also may hear FILSA claims. Abby did not squarely hold whether the jurisdiction of the Court of Federal Claims is exclusive. And to answer that question, we respectfully ask the court to return to the statute, Section 216B, which does not specifically mention the Court of Federal Claims, and instead, it broadly authorizes a remedy in any federal court of competent jurisdiction, not just one federal court, not just the Court of Federal Claims. Congress said any federal court. And so, I would agree with Ms. Riccio, I believe, touched upon this, that it would be truly incongruous for this court to hold that any federal court does not include the district courts when the claim is asserted against the United States, when any federal court does include a district court whenever the FILSA or Equal Pay Act claim is asserted against a private employer. They're all employers under the Act. They're all district courts are all courts of competent jurisdiction under the same remedies provision, Section 216B. And so, these are issues that Abby never grappled with.
Counsel, this is Judge Stoll, okay? I want to ask you something. There's some language in Abby about how the fairest reading of Section 216B is that it affirmatively invokes the forum specification for those damages suits found outside the four corners of the FLSA. The Tucker Act is the only available specification that has been identified. And then there's some other language later on and that says that the best reading is that it's natural to read the provision that is 216B as implicitly specifying a forum, the Tucker Act forum, in order to complete the waiver of sovereign immunity. I mean, a lot of the rationale here in Abby seems to be tied to the idea that the Court of Federal Claims is the only place, that it is by referring to a court of competent jurisdiction, the place that it's referring to there, Congress was referring to, was the Court of Federal Claims. So I have two questions for you. One is, what's your response to that? And the second one is, if we feel we are bound by Abby, then what option is there? Because we can't overrule prior panel precedent.
Sure, Your Honor. Happy to answer that. So we're not asking the court to overrule Abby. Abby obviously held what it held and said what it said. To the extent that Abby said that the court believes Abby said anything about the exclusivity question in the reasoning of that case, that is dicta, and it is not persuasive and not binding upon this court for the reasons that we have articulated, Your Honor. And Bormes was the game changer, Your Honor. I mean, there were a lot of old cases before Bormes that looked at this problem from a different perspective. We certainly did looked at it from a different perspective before Bormes. Bormes was a game changer. The Supreme Court said the Tucker Act cannot be superimposed upon an existing remedial scheme.
Well, I would just
also say that a self.
This is Judge Prost. I know after the argument, you're certainly going to look up the Stein case that we've called your attention. You might also look at, since we're talking about the government's position on these matters, at 1370 of Abbey, the court cites some of the oral argument by the Solicitor General in the Bormes case that you might want to take a look at as well or listen to that.
Yes, Your Honor, and I'm familiar with that, and I would add that, Your Honor, that was, again, a statement made by the government prior to the decision in Bormes. And so we respectfully submit Bormes was a game changer, and the court should take a fresh look at this and get it right.
The government did not petition for rehearing in Abbey. Do you know if there was any consideration, or they just thought, as you do now, that Abbey is just fine because even though the rationale is different, that's dicta that can be ignored by our panel?
It's the latter, Your Honor, that it was dicta. We wouldn't normally request reconsideration. Just with respect to language and an opinion, but this is the case. This is the case to consider in the first instance whether district court jurisdiction is the Court of Federal Claims possesses exclusive jurisdiction, or whether this particular district court erred in transferring the case. And so it's important for the court to reach this issue afresh. And the Fair Labor Standards Act, Section 216B, it is exactly the kind of self-executing remedial scheme that was discussed in Bormes. There, in 216B, you have a remedial scheme that details who can sue, for what, and where. There is absolutely no reason to resort to the gap-filling role of the Little Tucker Act.
But you recognize that in Abbey, our court said that statute-specific conclusion takes the FLSA case, this FLSA case, outside the reach of the Bormes principle. So our court clearly disagreed with your reading of Bormes, but you say it shouldn't restrain us or constrain us because the conclusion was simply that it stays in the Court of Federal Claims?
Your Honor, that we respectfully submit that's dicta, and it's not persuasive. That reasoning, we respectfully submit, is inconsistent with Bormes. It's inconsistent with the statutory language of 216B, and it's inconsistent with the way that the language in 216B, any federal court of competent jurisdiction, that very same language in the same provision with respect to the same defendant, employer, is interpreted depending on the nature of the defendant. There's no indication that Congress ever intended to make such a distinction. And because Dr. Metzinger properly invoked the district court's federal question jurisdiction under Section 1331, she's entitled to a merits determination in that forum, and we respectfully request that the court reverse the district court's transfer order for violating the transfer statute 1631 and ask the court to remand for the district court to adjudicate the merits of Dr. Metzinger's equal pay act claim.
Well, Mr. Greenspoon, let me just conclude by saying, speaking obviously just for myself, I hope you appreciate the frustration that may exist. Resources of the judiciary are being expended here, as they were in the district court in Massachusetts, by the First Circuit, and now that case is presumably heading here, where the government will take precisely the opposite view that forced the case to move forward the other way. So I hope you can appreciate that there's at minimum a bit of frustration in terms of the role of the judiciary, not to speak to people like Ms. Metzinger, who's being ping-ponged around with changing views by the government.
I fully appreciate, Your Honor, your view on that, and we should be more consistent. We try to get it right. In this case, before the trial court, the Department of Justice made a motion it shouldn't have made. We own that mistake, and we're trying to get it right here in this proceeding on appeal.
Okay. Can the court, this court, get any assurance that DOJ will do an inventory of the existing cases in the system so as to get its positions lined up?
Your Honor,
we have two mistakes. These are going to be inadvertent, some AUSA goofed. But, I mean, is the position of the current Justice Department to say we deal with the goofs after they happen, or are we proactive and try to do an inventory to find out what cases are in the system and make certain that there's a consistent policy at the AUSA level?
Your Honor, we have attempted to be consistent. We have broadcast communications within the Department of Justice on this very point, and all I can say is, Your Honor, there was a communication breakdown in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Counsel, you have some reply time ready available to you. Ms. Riccio?
I apologize. This is Elise. I apologize. I do believe Ms. Riccio used up all of her rebuttal.
All right. Well, why don't we restore 2 minutes of rebuttal if she needs it? If she has nothing else to add, we're fine. Counsel?
Thank you. She does appear to still be on the line. I'm not
sure. Maybe she's mooted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to alert the court that Judge Vance did not dismiss this case or dismiss it with prejudice. There's a statement in our brief that says that, and that's not what happened. She transferred the case based on the fact that she believed she did not have jurisdiction, and I did want to correct that. And to make just one more comment about what's been going on with the, frankly, it feels like a rabbit hole that we've been taken down. Your Honors have sort of suggested that we're looking for a forum. That is true because Dr. Metzinger deserves a forum. But, you know, the government's position was in the Eastern District of Louisiana opposite to the position that they took in the Abbey case. And it looks like, well, again, I would urge the court to do is to go back to these original jurisdiction statutes and do an analysis that doesn't look to what the argument is by the counsel or the parties, but simply what the language of the statutes themselves say, because I think that's what I finally tried to do once I also read those opinions that seemed to ping pong back and forth.
Thank you. We thank both sides, and the case is submitted.
Thank you.